We know what we think. What do you think? Call the Fan, 888-808-1019. Powered by Paramount Plus. Stream your local NFL on CBS game every week on Paramount Plus.
On the Fan. You know, I was just listening to that comment about Brian Cashman. It reminded me of what I said yesterday and how obviously the Juan Soto, because clearly the Juan Soto issue affects the trade deadline. Everybody says, right? You got Juan Soto, only could be the only year. Got to be all in. And I said it yesterday. I believe it today. And listening to Brian Cashman, yeah, I don't think they believe. Now, you don't know. But there are people out there, I've talked to them, people who work at this station, on air. I won't out them here. But do not believe that he would pay, Hal, this being, would not pay Soto more than Judge. And is not going to give him a big-time contract. And there's enough big-time contracts here. And that this is the year to win. And they don't expect the Yankees to, in a serious way, go after Juan Soto. And I completely disagree. And I think the way they treated the trade deadline is a little bit of an inkling into that. I don't think they view it. And you just heard right there from Brian Cashman that if they would, you know, if there was a trade to be made where major money is implicated moving forward, I don't know. Because while I disagree with Hal Steinbrenner and his comment that it's not feasible to have a payroll at $300+ million, I mean, we all know it's feasible. He's full of it, but he's not going to do it. Right, he's hoping to keep it under that last tier. I think it's 284, 285. Now, I don't know if he expects that to be this coming year or just in the future. That's the goal, and he'll be willing to live with it for the, you know, just because of the reality of it all, that he'd be willing to live with it for a year or two. But the goal isn't to clearly every year over 300 because, hey, we're the Yankees. That's not the goal. And if you're going to do that, if you're going to try to accomplish that, you need to, A, limit money everywhere else. And that means play the kids. That's what it means. That's why they didn't sign big-time free agent shortstops, because their best prospects were two shortstops at the time, Peraza and Volpe. So they didn't want to go out and spend money on shortstops because they thought they had cheaper answers to that question. And we'll find out if Volpe turns into that. He's been much better since the All-Star break. But they had cheaper options there. And I'm telling you right now, you heard that quote right there from Brian Cashman, that money attached to a player probably hindered the ability of the Yankees to go trade for him. And I firmly believe they don't want to trade a Jason Dominguez. They don't want to trade a Spencer Jones, because ultimately you need guys like that, big talented guys you believe in can be stars or good players in this league, to be cheap, under control, homegrown Yankees playing out on that field alongside the Judge you have to pay, the Stanton you have to pay, the Soto you have to pay, the Cole you have to pay, the Rodon you have to pay. Like, the big contracts, there are a handful you're allowed, including superstars, because, again, we could all joke about how Steinbrenner doesn't care about winning and he only cares about selling beer and chicken buckets and everything else. How do you sell beer and chicken buckets? You provide stars. Because winning a World Series provides it, but you can't guarantee that no matter what you do. You can provide stars. So he wants to sign Juan Soto. He wants to sign Aaron Judge. He wants to go out and get Gerrit Cole. You need stars as well to win and to sell tickets, if that's your particular viewpoint of how Hal Steinbrenner runs his operation. And how do you do that? You have a young Ben Rice at first. You have a young Austin Wells behind the plate. You have a young and inexpensive Anthony Volpe at shortstop. A young, inexpensive, for at least a couple years, Jazz Chisholm at second base. Hopefully you have a young center fielder in Jason Dominguez. That's how you do it. That's how you do it. And then once Soto signed long-term, maybe a Spencer Jones is available, because now the outfield's crowded. But even him, Stanton's going to eventually leave. There's a DH. You could see Soto becoming a DH. Now you've got a cheap outfielder as well, and Spencer Jones, while Soto transitions to DH. Like, that's how you do it. That's how you provide. That's how you sign all these players. That's how you try and figure out how to squeeze Soto into. Oh, you've already got this. You've already got Stan. You've already got Judge. You're not going to pay him more than Judge. And if you do, you got these all the contracts. You know how you do it? Cheap everywhere else, including even the likes of Clay Holmes, your closer, who's going to hit the free agent market. And believe it or not, this might just blow your mind. There's going to be a market for Clay Holmes. I know that's crazy because he's such a bum. But you see, wait until you see what he gets in free agency. You might even have to go cheap on the closer. Like, that's, you got stars, and then you got young grown talent. And then hopefully by the time your stars' contracts are ending, by the time your young, talented prospects are going to look to get paid is about the time your already paid guys are starting to come to the end of their careers. And maybe you have a year or two of overlap where the payroll is $300 million like it is now. But ultimately, that helps keep. You're paying the guy while these are young. While these are young, they're paying the guy up. Now we got to pay them while the old guys are gone. Like, that's how you keep it going.
That's David, how you stay mediocre forever.
That's a mediocre. Is that what the Yankees are, mediocre? Good again, me and you have a different opinion on what mediocre is.
Just good enough not to win.
Just good enough not to win the World Series, not divisions or playoffs. I guess the Dodgers are mediocre too. Because they won one World Series in a 60-game shortened season. Very mediocre, those Dodgers. That's what I thought. David in Rockland County. What's up, David?
Hey, Big Mac, how you doing?
Good, how are you?
Yeah, first-time caller here. I was looking at that TV screen. I was cursing out Brian Cashman at the deadline. I'm like, this is the first time Judge is healthy. Yep. We got Soto on the mend. We got Cole coming back. And you give us Jazz Chisholm and nothing else. This is ridiculous. I have two brothers that are big Toronto Blue Jay fans. They're like, bro, you're so spoiled. You're the Yankees. I was like, no. This is the year. The AL is horrible. We have to get to the World Series. What's happening? I completely disagree with you. You're hyping up the Yankees way too much over here.
Why? Who's better than the Yankees? Who's clearly
Someone's
better?
Better than the Yankees. They just have so many holes. Who's closing out the game for the Yankees?
Clay Holmes.
Clay Holmes is not a good closer. He's not the guy.
We always get nervous. You get nervous about anybody. Was Chapman good enough? Was anybody good enough? How about the other team's closers? Are they good enough? Who's good enough? What closer doesn't
Emmanuel
make you?
Class A.
All right. You got one. Give me another.
Emmanuel Class A.
Okay, so he's like the fourth or fifth, sixth best. Like, there, every closer makes you nervous. You don't. Do you watch a lot of Marlins games? They don't play meaningful games, so you know what? They don't get a chance to be nervous because they don't care. Like, the idea that all closers make you nervous, and I hear what you're saying, but like, what trade should they have made that you're unhappy with? Like, now that you're
Yandy Diaz.
Yandy Diaz.
He didn't get. I don't believe in this starting lineup. I don't believe in it. They were bad the last 6 weeks.
He didn't get traded. They didn't move.
I hear that. Give him an offer. They can't disagree.
So you want to give up Spencer Jones for Yandy Diaz?
Yes.
Okay.
At this point of the season, we need hitters.
Since the All-Star break, they've scored 7 runs every single night. They've scored.
This offense is Soto and Judge. Soto and Judge for a long time.
And for the last two months, right now it's not. Right now it's Wells. It's Verdugo. It's Jazz Chisholm. It's a lot of guys are like those guys need to play better like they did the first 2.5 months of the year when they built the best record in baseball.
But you're jumping on this train right now that they're the guys right now, the Verdugo.
Jumping on the train of 7 weeks, and I'm combining this week as well as the first 2 months of the season. And I'm not saying it's good enough. I would have added more bats. I completely agree. But, again, a lot of the guys, like, it's hard for me to get – they didn't get traded. It's not like I could say, hey, why didn't you do that like this team did? How could you let him go there? Who knows? They traded the guys. You don't know if Yandy Diaz was available for trade. He didn't get moved. You don't know if Rengifo was available for trade. He didn't get moved. You don't know if these make him an offer he can't refuse. To what level? Like, you just blindly, whatever it is, you got to go get Yandy Diaz. I wanted Yandy Diaz too. And if he got traded, I'd be able to point to and say, hey, this is what you got for him. Why couldn't you have done a Yankee similar deal to that? I don't have anything to go on. He didn't get moved. Like, how do we know he wasn't clearly, he didn't get traded. So I'm open to the idea that Brian Cashman, I called it an underwhelming deadline. It wasn't an all-in type deadline. But as I get away from it, and yes, the positive play of this last week, you know, sweeping Philadelphia and having the most wins of any team in Major League Baseball makes me feel a little bit better about it. But as I look at it, I can't find the deal where I go, oh man, why didn't they do that one? You could point to Tanner Scott. Sure, okay, I agree with you. Big-time reliever. Would have loved to have him here. Lefty reliever needed him. But, I mean, they gave up three of their best five prospects for a rental. Do you want to trade away three of the best five Yankee prospects, including Spencer Jones, for a reliever for the next 2 months that doesn't guarantee you a damn thing?
You know, does Spencer Jones guarantee you a damn thing? He doesn't.
No, but, Spencer Jones...
supposed to be in the big leagues right now.
Well, he's
double A. He's the 40% strikeout rate. He's doing nothing there.
No, I understand. And Dominguez had the same kind of numbers prior when he was at that point. They believe in him. He's a big time prospect. He's also got value, though. Even if you say he's not going to come up and play for the Yankees, fine. I could find a better trade that gives me more if I'm going to trade my best prospect than a 1-2 month rental for a reliever. I can make a trade and get another hitter in here who's going to have years of control. Like, you want to trade him? You mentioned the Toronto Blue Jays. If Vladimir Guerrero's available, yeah, all right, let's go. Spencer Jones, I'm open. You know, but for a 2 month rental of a reliever that is the most fickle position on earth, like, what if he comes in and stinks and I just traded away my best asset for a reliever for 2 months? Like, I can't. I understand why the Yankees didn't do it.
Gleyber Torres gives me a heart attack at second base.
No, he makes me nervous, but he's been hitting for the last month.
He's been hitting the last month. He still strikes out on those high pitches. He looks like he just lost at the plate. Even when he's hitting well,
Listen, as far as his offense, even when he's hitting well, he strikes out. He's hitting well. Everyone hits well with it. Judge struck out four times yesterday. I mean, he's hitting. Verdugo is hitting now. Let's see what this team can be. They were the best team for 2.5 months. We forget that. Again, they were awful. Awful. Right? They were the worst. They were the worst team in baseball this side of the 17 losses in a row, Chicago White Sox. Nobody was worse. It was the White Sox and then the Yankees. For 6 weeks. 6 weeks. And they still have the most wins in baseball. And they have scored the most runs. They have scored 566 runs, the most in Major League Baseball. They now have the highest run differential in all of Major League Baseball. I mean, the name of the game is scoring runs and not giving up runs. And the difference between them. I mean, I'm not giving you meaningless numbers. I'm not giving you, you know, record in day games with, you know, playing against the team's third or fourth best starter. Like, I'm not giving you nonsense. It's run scored and run differential. And they lead Major League Baseball in it. And they were awful for 6 weeks. That's how good they were for the first 2.5 months. That team is still there. That's the team we've seen for the last five games. Short sample size, totally agree. I'm not telling you they're world beaters. What I'm telling you is that when I look across the landscape of Major League Baseball, you said it yourself, the American League isn't that good. For 6 weeks, we talk about the opportunity the Yankees have. For 6 weeks, the Baltimore Orioles had an opportunity to pull away in this division. For 6 weeks, they floundered almost as much as the Yankees did. Nobody has more wins in all of Major League Baseball. Did Brian Cashman do enough at the trade deadline? I think there's a very strong argument that he didn't. Very strong argument that he didn't. But again, I'm looking at it and I'm trying to say what trade that was made that he should have made. And you can argue the Flaherty one because they need a starting pitcher and it sounds like they were close. And whether or not it was the medicals or not, I guess there's a little bit of a confusion on it. Or, you know, Brian Cashman's being a little bit guarded with his answers, which is usually he's very transparent with his answers, but I don't know what trade they should have made that they didn't. the asking price for all of these guys was crazy. And a lot of the offensive, like Jonathan India we're targeting, right? Oh, they're going to go get India. They're going to go get Diaz. They're going to go get Ringifo. Like, those are the guys that that was supposed to be the offensive guys they got, as well as Jazz Chisholm. Like, those are the four guys. Jazz was the only one traded, and they got him. India never got moved. Diaz didn't get moved. Ringifo didn't get moved. John in Maspeth. What's up, John?
Hey, how's it going, C-Man? How's it going?
Good. How are you, buddy?
I'm good. It feels like we were finally over the hump, you know? It feels like we went.
Yeah, I would say that. Listen, I don't know how they're going to be from this point on, but I'm hoping, I feel fairly confident that the disgusting play of the last 6 weeks is at least over.
Well, from this point on, look at this. We have the second easiest schedule remaining in baseball.
Yes.
In terms of the strength of schedule.
And I believe they're due for, and I think they're due for a bunch of home games as well. I know they have a big homestand coming up now. They've played
we
more.
Got
they've played
31,
more.
We got 31 of, we got 31 games at home. And 21 on the road.
On the road, yeah. So they have around 10 more home games still, and the schedule right now, they're going to play the last place Blue Jays, who sold off a bunch of pieces, but still have a decent starting. Still, they're going to throw. I think they're going to get Gausman. They're going to get Berrios. They're going to get some decent starting pitching thrown at them. But the last place Blue Jays, and then the Angels and the Rangers, and then the White Sox and Tigers on the road.
I wanted to ask you, though, right?
Mm-hmm.
Assuming everyone currently healthy stays healthy.
Yeah.
And assuming the players who are scheduled to be back soon, like Schmidt and Hamilton and Dominguez.
Yes.
And Rizzo. Assuming, everyone stays healthy and the people who are supposed to be back soon come back. What do you think the playoff rotation and the 1-9 lineup would look like?
It's impossible. It's the starting rotation is really difficult without telling me how the guys pitch the rest of the way, whether or not they feel Luis Gil is going to be in a position to finish the year as a starting pitcher. Right now, they feel fairly confident or good about it, but I don't know how that could change. Clark Schmidt's got to come and be healthy, so I like there.
Yeah,
there are tough answers to that.
Who would you go in as your top three starters? Obviously Cole. Then who else would you be?
Top three starters are Cole, Hill, and Rodon.
Cole and Rodon. Now, assuming that the outfield is healthy and Dominguez is back.
Yeah.
Who do you start in the outfield? Obviously, Stan's going to take the DH spot.
Yeah,
obviously it's going to be Judge, Soto, and do you put Dominguez out there?
No, I got to see it. And listening to the team, like I don't think Dominguez. I think Dominguez is going to be in the minor leagues until September. I don't think he's coming back.
Yeah, I think so too. I think so too. Unless there's an injury.
Yeah.
But we also have Rizzo coming back. So if Rizzo comes back,
yeah,
what would be the corresponding move? You think they send Ben Rice back now? They're going to have to. I don't see them DFAing LeMahieu. They're not going to eat that contract. They're not going to touch, they're not going to do anything to Trent Grisham. He's been solid defensively out there. He's a defensive replacement.
Yeah, no, they wouldn't. I agree with you. But I don't know. I don't know when he's coming. I don't know when he's coming back. It might be not until September. And if so, the rosters expand a little bit, so the answer becomes a little bit easier. It could be Ben Rice sent down, no doubt. Or with the idea that you've added Jazz Chisholm, another infielder, Oswaldo Cabrera could be sent down.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking, too.
Yeah, I mean, those are the two guys who would be sent down for Rizzo. It depends on who's hitting. If Ben Rice is hitting, like right now, the way he's hitting, I would think it's probably Ben Rice who gets sent down, and Rizzo takes over at first base for a time. You could always bring Ben Rice back. So, I don't know, but that's an issue they don't have to worry about just yet. But if Ben Rice gets hot, again, I find it hard to believe they're going to bring back Rizzo and not at least give him an opportunity. It depends on how long he has. Like, if he comes back in 3 weeks, right, and he has the full month of September and a week of August and the full month of September, I think they're going to let him hit for a while. and see what he does and see if he can get back, see if he's rested, see how his body feels. They're going to let Rizzo's making a lot of money. Rizzo's an important figure on this team. Rizzo's best friends with the captain. And I just think they're going to give him an opportunity to see if he can hit. It's not like Ben Rice is killing it. If Ben Rice just took off, I don't think they would replace him. But he hasn't been. So, I mean, we got to see what the roster looks like. 888-808-1019. So it's hard to give you my guys. Like, does Clark Schmidt come back and deal? Because if Clark Schmidt comes back and deal, then, yeah, he's my fourth guy over Stroman, I suppose.
Have you seen any timetable for Rizzo?
I haven't heard a damn thing about anything.
Exactly,
Rizzo.
Right? It's like he disappeared. I don't even think he was in the dugout in Philly.
I haven't heard it. No, he probably's not traveling with the team. I haven't heard a damn thing about Rizzo. I have no idea how long it's going to be. I'm assuming he's coming back, even if it's September. They're going to give him some play. They're going to give him some run. And I was all for DFAing and just cutting DJ LeMahieu, but he's bought himself a stay event execution for a little bit with this game. I don't think this is going to be a regular thing. I don't think DJ is now just back, but I have to admit, Yankee fans, be fair. We all are fed up with him. It's been brutal. Playing him makes no sense, but yesterday's game, he hit a grand slam and then laced a double in the gap on an outside fastball. Those are at-bats. That's vintage DJ, and we haven't seen it for a second this year.
But if you could ask any Yankee fan, hey, which player of all the players who are struggling would you want the most to turn around? I think Yankee fans would say DJ. I think every Yankee fan's rooting for him.
Oh, yeah, sure. Because what we saw was a batting champion and someone who puts the ball in play and someone who's like spectacular with runners in scoring position. The best of DJ is by far the best of Gleyber Torres. You know, better than the best of Gleyber Torres, the best of Verdugo. Like, DJ LeMahieu is legitimate. He finished third in the MVP, shortened season. But the year before that, he was unbelievable. Then he finished third in the MVP. I mean, yes, no doubt. If there's a single player who could revert back to the best version of himself, I guess it would be between him and Rizzo, I suppose, or Stanton with 59 home runs. But of the ones who are really struggling, yeah, it's DJ. And that's why they don't want to do it. That's why they continue to throw him out there. Because if he gets hot, if he finds himself, he's a difference maker. That's why they're doing it. Clear as like that. It's not about, I don't even think it's about the money. On some level, it's the money. I'm not oblivious to the idea he's making a lot of money. But I think more of playing him is because, hey, if we ever get him going, it's a contact guy. He's great with runners in scoring position. He's a 300-plus hitter. It brings a different dynamic. That's what they're looking for, and they've been unable to find it up until yesterday, and we'll see if it sticks. 888-808-1019. McMonagle here with you on The Fan. We'll come back. Continue to take your phone calls till 5 o'clock in the warm-up show right here on The Fan.
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
He's homered! Derek Jeter homers to tie the game, and there it is. Hit number 3,000.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the Free Odyssey app.
So speaking about homers, I told you last week, you know, I like to inject my life into the show every once in a while, especially these five-hour programs. Again, five-hour midnight ride. Taking it till 5 o'clock in the warm-up show. I told you that last week my son had a very important tennis baseball home run derby that he was very concerned with. And I'm just here to tell you that he won. And he, you know, apparently hit balls over houses. And, you know, he's so full of it. It's unbelievable. The amount of, like, he's so funny. He invented tennis baseball, which Alex was here the night I told the story. Apparently, Alex has played tennis baseball. So he did not invent tennis baseball. He also says he invented a game called Jackpot, which there's no way in the world he invented a game and called it Jackpot. Never in a million years. Then apparently he had a tennis home run derby that he won by hitting 72 home runs. And he hit them all over the place in people's houses, over the houses, over this, but doesn't matter. He won. He was very excited about it, so I wanted to pay that off after I told you that he was very excited in the morning for a baseball tennis home run derby, and he won it. So congratulations. Chip off the old block. We were talking... What's that? A liar? Yeah, no. Good one. No, a home run derby champion and an athlete. We were talking about what Olympic sport do you think you could be good in? As we were watching the Olympics, and I was talking with Zoo and Fleeleman the other day, you know, after the show, I was in the control room during the warm-up show, and we were just talking about the Olympics. My wife is, like, upset. Like, last night she yelled at me. She was like, you can fast-forward this baseball game, right? And I'm like, well, technically I could, but I'm watching the game. Why are we just sitting here? No. I want to put on the Olympics. Get through this Yankee game and Met game as fast as possible. We're putting on the Olympics on the big TV, and we're watching it. I'm like, okay. I just made a cup of coffee. I'm sitting down, and I'm watching the Olympics. I'm like, why do you care so much about the Olympics? It's not that I don't care necessarily, but I don't care. Like, I when I watch it, I'm, like, interested. When I'm watching the race, I'm pulling for the American, but, like, I don't know. But so she's obsessed with it. She very much is into the Olympics. I never knew. I guess I don't have a very good memory because I don't remember 4 years ago, or I guess it's every 2 years considering winter and summer. The Winter Olympics are far better. Can we just say that too? The Winter Olympics, skating is better. Curling is better. I don't know. I get hockey, I suppose, you know, although it shuts down the regular season. The NBA, yeah, I mean, I guess they beat. Who'd they beat last night? South Sudan or something? I don't know. I have a hard time getting into the basketball.
You call Team USA the NBA?
What'd I say?
Said the NBA beat South Sudan.
Oh, yeah. Well, the NBA players, I guess. Yeah, Team USA. Well, because I said the NHL shut down the NHL. I must have just had the NBA on my mind. But I don't get into it. But so we were talking about it.
And they brought it on to the morning show, by the way. That conversation about what sport would you be able to compete
in. Me? Specifically?
They didn't mention you.
Okay, good.
Greg said that Zoo brought it up.
Yes. So, yeah, I guess Zoo was curious in that question. So he asked me, and I was thinking about it. And I was like, I think I could do all of them, except the ones that require running or swimming. Anything besides those two things, like, I think if I trained, like, could I do archery? If I trained for, like, a year, I think I could. I think I'm, like, I have good enough hand-eye coordination. You should see me rip up, just absolutely rip up Rock Band or whatever, the guitar video game, Guitar Hero. I rip up Guitar Hero, and that's all hand-eye coordination. That takes no music ability whatsoever. That is just straight-up hand-eye coordination. Excellent hand-eye coordination. So I feel like, could I be an Olympian at it in a year? No, but I feel like I could be pretty damn good. Like, what's the rule of eight? It's like the rule of 18 minutes or something. If you spend 18 minutes...
I think it's like 1,000 hours, though, or 2,000 hours.
Yeah, but it takes like 18 minutes a day. For like 2 years or something. If you spend 18 minutes a day on something, you'll be better than 95% of the population at that, and whatever it is, guitar, piano, archery, whatever. Axe throwing.
You think top 5% of the population total is good enough to compete in the Olympics? You probably have to be top 1% closer.
Well, I guess. I'm just saying. I get close enough. Isn't that someone? Couldn't I? If I was a top 5, you don't think the top 5% of archery... whatever you call them, archeryists. I don't know, what would you call an archery? Arrow shooterists? I'm adding ists to it now when I shouldn't. But like, if you were the top 5 of the best archers in the world, you couldn't compete to get into the Olympics? Like, you wouldn't be at qualifying events, like top 5 in the population?
It's just Archer or Bowman.
Archer or Bowman, yeah. But then better than 95% is an abstract number. It's just you could be better than 97, but somewhere around you'd be better than 95% at 18 minutes a day. That's it. If you put 18 minutes a day into anything at the end of, I don't know, a year or whatever it is, you'd be top 5% in that field.
Probably not if you do a triathlon for 18 minutes a day.
Maybe. Maybe. If you ran 18 minutes a day every day trying to train, maybe. I don't know. Yeah, you're probably right. Maybe not running. There are people who aren't. I mean, Mark Chernoff runs every morning.
And no, it's the triathlon, though. It's all three. You have to bike for 6, and then you...
Well, you'd have to... No, it'd have to be 18 for each one. You'd have to spend 18 minutes on running, 18 minutes on swimming, 18 minutes on, you know, whatever else. But... Of course, Boomer was in there. And Boomer was like, sumo wrestling. I was like, yeah, yeah, okay.
Said the same thing on air about Zoo.
Oh, about Zoo, okay. So, yeah, we were both in the same. But joke's on you, because that's kind of like offensive lineman. I could see that. I bet you I could. He's probably not wrong. Now, I'm not nearly as big, whatever he might say or anybody might say. I'm not big enough to be a sumo wrestler, I don't think, at least. But I'm good at staying low and pushing people around. It's what I did. So I could see myself competing in a sumo wrestling competition.
Well, next time there's going to be flag football, so you could just play offensive line and flag football.
Next year is going to be flag football?
No, next year, Summer Olympics? Next Summer Olympics, yeah.
Really, they're adding flag football? Is the NFL players going to play in it?
Which NFL player would risk it, though? And also, it's during training camp, so I assume not.
Are there professional flag football players? Is it just going to be talented athletes going out to make a team? Like, that's probably what it's just going to be.
Right, and they said it'll probably be guys who just retired from the NFL
or
couldn't quite cut it.
XFL. But I could see, like, older quarterbacks for sure. Right?
How that came up.
Yeah. I could see Drew Brees right now competing in a flag football. Tom Brady probably wouldn't sit that one out. God knows Tom Brady. Oh, it'd be Captain America too? Oh, well, of course. Tom Brady is going to do it in 4 years. I guarantee you.
Well, they suggested Aaron Rodgers would be
just about finished. Yeah. I could see Aaron Rodgers doing it. He still has football to play. And I love what I've seen from Aaron Rodgers, man. I love getting on Tippmann for, being a little erratic with his snapping. I love it. I love the conversations between him and Wilson on the sidelines. I love it. I love the getting on guys. I love that they have that kind of relationship where they can yell at each other and it ends in a handshake and figure this thing out and go about it, because they're two passionate people about winning. It's the indifference. It's the not caring. It's the letting Aaron Rodgers walk all over you. And Aaron Rodgers walks in there. He takes over. He's the guy. I don't want my number one receiver just going, yes, sir. No. Like, this is what it should be. They should be in there figuring it out. He should have belief in himself to stand up to Aaron Rodgers. And Aaron Rodgers should be pushing him to get that out of him. Like, I am everything I see from the New York Jets, I get gung-ho. Every time I see something about the Jets, I get more and more excited about it, other than when Robert Saleh speaks. Other than that. As long as Robert Saleh would just shut the hell up, I would have the Jets in the Super Bowl right now.
You could add Nathaniel Hackett to that too.
That's true. Yeah. And I don't want to say I think that he's a good head coach, because I don't know. I firmly believe that the quarterback position is so entrenched in everything you do and every aspect of a team. Much like the head coach is, no doubt. And that's why some of the Daniel Jones defenders will tell you all the different offensive coordinators, all the different head coaches, and that's fair. That's totally fair. Because head coaching and everything is obviously so important to what you do. But the quarterback position is so entrenched in every aspect of the team. And the quarterbacks the Jets have had, specifically with Zach Wilson, with Robert Saleh, it is so impossible to get a really good, comfortable read. Now, he could have handled a million things better, no doubt. A million things better. And I remember, yesterday or 2 days ago, Brett in Long Island was saying, well, they faded down the stretch and the Giants, they lost Aaron Rodgers four snaps in and they finished with a better record than the New York Jets, Giants. Let's not forget this. They beat the Giants heads up, and then they finished with a better record and had the lesser draft pick. So let's not make it seem like Brian Daboll's the great coach and Saleh's not. Like, I don't know. And I'm not here to tell you Saleh's a great head coach. I have no idea. Every piece of information I have to try and make a decision makes me think he's not. From what I have to work with, the few, like, tentpole information that I have to grasp at to try and figure out whether or not Robert Saleh is a good head coach or not lead to him not being a good head coach. But I just have a tough time to just make a blanket decision on whether or not this guy can be a head coach in the NFL when he's been given that quarterback room. And not only that, the turmoil of the entire team not believing in him. And then last year, to the point of when Rodgers comes here, he's the savior. He takes over everything. He's the team. Him and Nathaniel Hackett are the offense. He is the offense. And the entire team got excited, all the talk, all the hard knock stuff, all the enthusiasm about the season. Opening the season on Monday Night Football, he's literally on 9/11 running out there with the American flag with the spotlight on him. It was going to change everything about the Jets. And it got taken away from them four plays in. Do you know how difficult it is to recover from that? Forget the game that he ended up winning, by the way. But then just the rest of the season, when they know what they're going back to, and I don't care what they said about, oh, you should see him, he's a different person in training camp. Yeah, because he knew he wasn't going to have to play, or at least thought he wasn't going to have to play. The team didn't believe in him. And to have a team, right, where has known nothing but losing before he ever got here, a team and a franchise that has known nothing but losing for the last 13 years, more so than any team in professional sports, to finally feel like you have brought a savior here to take you out of that, and to lose him four plays in, that is an impossible coaching job. That is an impossible job to try and figure out. Now, are there issues throughout that process where, man, geez, that was... Why would you do that? How could, you know, that doesn't point to being a good head coach? Totally, of course. Are there coaches throughout history who could have done a better job with it and won more and had a more cohesive unit and figured things out better? Of course. Bill Belichick's in that situation. Bill Parcells is in that situation. Like, yeah, it's probably better than Robert Saleh. I'm not saying he's a terrific head coach hampered by such things. I just can't get a read on whether or not he can be a winning NFL head coach, based on the nonsense that he's had to deal with and the quarterback play he's had to deal with and the inner turmoil of a team never believing in the quarterback, feeling like they finally had that solution, and then having it ripped away from them only to be put back in the hands of the quarterback they don't trust. That's an impossible spot. Doesn't mean the offense had to be as bad as it was. Doesn't mean the defense didn't have to, you know, give up the back-breaking plays that it did at times. Doesn't mean any of that. They still could have went out there and played much better. But we talk about it as if Sal is a terrible head coach and the Jets are going to have to win despite that. I don't know. Might be true. Definitely might be true. All available signs indicate to that fact. But I just have a hard time with it. And so looking at, you know, again, here we are in the same position we were last year. I believe the same thing I believed last year. As long as he's healthy, we'll have to see. But if Rodgers can play, and I believe if healthy, he can play. And again, he threw 6 touchdown passes yesterday, and I don't want to talk about practice too much. I don't get hung up on it. And they had, you know, an offensive red zone type practice. He threw 6 red zone touchdown passes in the practice yesterday. He had 2 incompletions. Every indication from anyone who's watching what's going on at Jet Camp, is telling you that this guy can still sling it. And I have no doubt. I don't care his age. You don't recover. I don't care the kind of surgery he had. You don't recover from what he recovered from as fast as he does without being some kind of significant, you know, special athlete still at his age. And we know what the skill is. And so I don't know if he'll be vintage Aaron Rodgers. I don't know if he'll win an MVP. I don't know if he'll be that caliber player. But I expect him to be pretty damn good. And along with the offensive weapons that they have, along with hopefully the new, you know, offensive line that they've established, and with a defense that should be top 5 in the NFL, and, you know, a good front, hopefully Haason Reddick comes in and adds that that pass rush element to it, and arguably the best, you know, corner tandem in the league, should be good enough to win a lot of games. And you look at the early schedule, yes, they opened up against the 49ers, but the first 8 games or so, a lot of them are very winnable games. And I believe in the NFL, unlike other sports we see that play more games, no other sport can a good team be a great team by an early easy schedule and winning some football games, or a good team become a bad football team. by struggling and trying to battle back all year long. It's a very, just the start of a season, and I might be biased in that opinion because I'm a Giants fan, and I've watched the early parts of seasons just absolutely kill them. Like year after year. Off to slow starts absolutely kill you. And I've seen Giant teams with Tom Coughlin. If you remember, Tom Coughlin was the opposite. They would get off to these 6-2 starts and then fade down the stretch before making it to the postseason and obviously getting hot. I would much rather go 6-2 and try and hang on than start 2-6 and try and come back. And we've seen that time and time again. So if they can get off to a good start, start to have some belief behind this quarterback, behind this head coach, behind this defense, behind this team. I look around the rest of that division. I thought last year the Bills were going to have a down year. I was right for the first half of the season, and then they had a tremendous second half. I think the Bills are clearly, you know, down. They've lost some players. They've added some players, but they've lost some players. They're in, you know, the cap situation they're in. I don't know if I trust the Dolphins. I don't know if I trust that quarterback. I don't know if I trust that offense in big games and big spots on the road in the elements. I don't know. I feel like the Jets are the best team in that division, and I feel like the Jets are exactly what Aaron Rodgers said they are. One of a handful of teams good enough to win the Super Bowl. And we'll see where it goes from there. But I love the leadership of them so far. I mean, put away all the other nonsense. That is real. And it's not immaterial, and it is part of the conversation. His nonsense and his interviews with Pat McAfee and him running for vice president and, you know, knowing everything there is to know about COVID and politics and everything else he's, you know, an assumed expert on and willing to talk to anybody who was willing to listen about it. I get that. But just on the field, I love, there was a comment where he's like, Tippmann's one of the better, you know, offensive linemen we have, great player. If he's going to be a little wonky with his snaps, he can live with me getting on his ass. Like I love that. See if you can find that one for me from Aaron Rodgers about Tippmann. Like I love that comment. That's exactly right. I don't care that he, you know, listen, I'm here to win. His snaps are unacceptable a couple times this week. I got on his ass. He can live with it. Like bingo. You know, me and Wilson are trying to figure things out. We gotta learn. It's a touch and go kind of thing. It's a relationship we're building. It takes time. We're gonna have to play together. We're working through things at camps. It gets heated because I'm passionate. He's passionate. You got the Tippmann cut. Yeah, this is what he said about. So obviously, not only did he have Aaron Rodgers and Garrett Wilson kind of get into it on the sidelines, but apparently there's been a couple of snapping issues from Tippmann. The center, and there's been a little bit of reporting that there's a little tiff there, and this was the comment on that.
I like to, you know, push guys to believe themselves maybe more than they do at the time, but a guy like Joe Tippmann, he has the ability to play a long time in this league at center, and he's got a chance to be an all-pro, I think. So if he's snapping the ball a little wayward from time to time, he can take it. You know, he can take me jumping his ass a little bit and getting on him.
I love that. That is, honestly, and we could say whatever we want about Aaron Rodgers and his nonsense. Like I just said, totally agree. That is the comment of a leader. He built him up. Like in that comment, he literally, after getting on him at practice and yelling at him, he just went in front of the media, built him up, said he's got every ability to be an all-pro. He can be in this league for a long freaking time. But you know what? His snaps have been a little wayward. And if that's going to be the case, I'm going to get on his ass because he's better than that. That is literally, like, that's perfect. That's exactly what I want my leaders to say. And as someone who just got his ass reamed out by Aaron Rodgers, that's exactly what I want to hear. Not, hey, listen, those snaps are unacceptable. It can't happen. Right? That's one way. But to hear he's doing it because he believes in me. Aaron Rodgers, 4-time MVP, Hall of Famer, one of the greatest to ever do it, thinks I can be an all-pro. And he's not going to just sit back and not make sure it happens. I love it. I love it. I think Aaron Rodgers, as long as he has to play, clearly. If he doesn't play, the whole thing falls. It's a house of cards built on Aaron Rodgers. But I do believe that he is giving this group everything. I think he's 100% all in. I don't care how many days he missed to go to Egypt. I don't. I think he's all in. I think he cares about winning. I think he has a lot to prove and a chip on his shoulder about everything. All the nonsense, too. I think it's built the chip bigger. That people want to say his opinions on COVID are ridiculous, or he talks out of, with things he has no idea about, and the idea that he could be a vice presidential candidate is preposterous. All that stuff gets added to the chip, whether I agree with some of the things I just said or not. It gets added to the chip that's on his shoulder, and I think he's taking it as a direct challenge to lead this team out of the doldrums that has been the worst franchise in professional sports for the last 13 years. And whether it's putting his arms around Mekhi Becton last year, whether it's going to the Ranger games, whether it's whatever the case may be, he's going to get on you. He's going to praise you. He's going to pat you on the back. He's going to scream in your face. He's going to be the secondary head coach of this team. And that makes a lot of people nervous. A lot of people don't like the idea that it's not just, hey, he's fallen in line behind Salah or whomever his head coach is. No, that's not the situation they have in this room. I find it very hard to believe that Peyton Manning played under those circumstances. I find it very hard to believe that some of the great players in this league never had the role or the standing inside the organization that Aaron Rodgers has right now.
Tom Brady with Todd Bowles.
Right, exactly right. Tom Brady didn't come into Tampa. Tom Brady didn't come into Tampa and insert his way of doing things and be as important as any head coach, considering the amount of Super Bowls he's won? Of course he did. Of course he did. It's probably part of the reason why he left the Patriots, because he wanted that role and he couldn't get it with the great, all-knowing, all-powerful Bill Belichick. This can work. This can really work. As long as he's healthy and playing well. This can really work, and I love everything that he's doing. I love the arguments. I love the fighting. I love the building him up as I'm fighting with him. I love it all. He does every time he talks about Wilson. One of the great, he talks about Devontae Adams a lot, but he also talks about Wilson, especially can be the relationship they're building, how great he is, the way he sees the game, blah blah blah. And that's why we have those kinds of conversations. Thittman, great player. He can be an All-Pro. I love everything I see about him. But you know what? When his snaps are crap, I'm gonna get in his face. Love it. 888-808-1019. I think the Jets have a real good chance to be special. And God, do they need it. They need it for so many different reasons, mainly just to not be the Jets anymore. They just need a culture shock. The fan base needs a culture shock. For anything that comes up, they don't get the benefit of the doubt on anything. Every story that comes out, he goes to Egypt and the Jets handled it the exact wrong way. Like, again, what's gone on in Kansas City? How many different situations have they had to deal with? What happened in their running back room? With their wide receiver? Like, all kinds of things happen. You know what? No one gets on Kansas City because they're Super Bowl champs. But the Jets, what a joke of a franchise the way they handled the situation. Because they haven't been to the playoffs in 13 years. Because their most prominent moment in the last 15 years has been a butt fumble. That's why. That all needs to change. And as long as he stays healthy, I think they're primed to have a change. 888-808-1019, 888-808-1019. McMonagle here with you on The Fan. We'll come back, take your phone calls for the next 3 hours leading up to the warm-up show at 5. So I opened up the call to Jet fans. Let's go. Let's talk about it. You should be excited. Football starts tonight. Hall of Fame game tonight. No starters will play for the Bears, but hey, we'll watch some football tonight. It's camp time. We finished Hard Knocks. Giants and Jet fans, let's go. Let's talk a little football, especially you Jet fans who should be pumped and primed and ready and excited for a chance to really win at a level that you haven't probably seen since, what, 98? 888-808-1019. 888-808-1019, at least in the regular season. I know you went to two AFC championships with Rex, but that team wasn't a regular season. I mean, Rex thought you were out of the playoffs after a loss in that stretch. So we'll come back, take your phone calls, have some fun all the way to 5 right here on The Fan.